and welcome to Inspire Indeed on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, radio for the rest of us. My name is Elaine Summerfield, and I'm your host for Inspire Indeed, where we are learning about community issues and the nonprofits and community leaders that are working to address them. And hopefully you'll learn something new and be inspired to think about how you might make a difference with your deeds. Today we'll hear from an organization that fights for social justice and calls on people of faith to promote public policy changes that, among other things, alleviate the suffering caused by living in poverty and address the issue of the extremely high number of people that we have in our community living in poverty. Marco Grimaldo is the president and CEO of the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy, and I'm so pleased to introduce you all to him today. Welcome, Marco.
Thank you, Elaine. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. It's so great of you to join us. Well, the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy focuses on social justice and reducing the number of people living in poverty. Is that correct?
We do. We work on social justice issues more broadly than that even. We talk about poverty. We talk about vulnerable communities throughout Virginia. That may include work on health care or on reducing poverty outright, important programs that help put food on the table for struggling families, but then also thinking about the impacts of climate change on low-income families and sort of who has the capacity to really wrestle with, tough economic times.
Okay, so how would you describe some of your big picture or overarching goals that you're trying to reach?
Sure. So the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy has been around for about 30 years now. Growing out of a movement that started with the Virginia Council of Churches, it grew to include people of faith from many different faith traditions. Now we each year gather the opinions of our members through a system of polling, as well as trying to gather the information from our coalition partners to decide on a set of issues that we'll work on. This year, those fall into four main areas. Healthcare. So we work with Virginia Consumer Voices for Healthcare to work on the Affordable Care Act implementation in Virginia. That includes both the establishment of an affordable, accessible exchange process, as well as Medicaid expansion in Virginia.
Okay. Now, the exchange process, can you explain what that is a little bit?
Sure. So I think when the Affordable Care Act was originally passed, it's interesting that we probably expected that we would all have some expansion of Medicaid because the federal government already did Medicaid work. But what we didn't know much about were these federal exchanges or potentially state exchanges for states that opted in to the process. So the Affordable Care Act provides that there will be a new sort of system for providing access to health care for people who would be able to buy health care at more affordable prices, in some cases with the aid of subsidies that would come to them from the federal government. The states have an opportunity to create those exchanges. These are a marketplace for health insurance that allows you a way to compare across plans and understand what you're buying and also be able to access the federal subsidies that are available as a consequence of the Affordable Care Act.
So hopefully a more transparent and more accessible marketplace for health insurance than what we currently experience.
I think that's right. And I think the piece that we're very interested in is to make sure that consumers' voices and concerns are in that process, so that as whether Virginia implements a state exchange or whether the federal government implements an exchange for Virginia, that in either case there should be consumers' concerns taken into consideration.
Okay, great. So that's one way that you look at how you can ensure that you're including those voices that aren't always heard from, or maybe underrepresented voices.
I think that's definitely the case. There's no question right now that for many middle-income families, if they're struggling right now, it may well be because of healthcare. Mm-hmm. Healthcare is a huge concern for middle-income families, especially for older folks. Who are in some cases approaching, not quite ready to benefit from Medicare, but, not able to afford their rising costs of health insurance as well as the cost of medication.
Mm-hmm. And as we age, it's just that much more important to get access to health care.
Well, I think so. And I think it's really important for all of us. Many folks who haven't had health care in a consistent manner are in some cases coming to present themselves for treatment in circumstances that are much more serious than they might have been had they been treated earlier. Certainly there's good reason to make sure that children and women are accessing health care in a regular basis so that they aren't presenting with more serious problems that are more concerning down the road.
Right. So healthcare is one issue area that you're interested in. And what's the group you're partnering with again there?
So we benefit through a program of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation that allows us to work with a coalition of partners in Virginia. We come together as the Virginia Consumer Voices for Healthcare.
Okay, great. And what are some other policy issues that you set as priorities this year?
The other area that we work on, again in a coalition, but through a distinct program, is Virginia Interfaith Power and Light. Interfaith Power and Light is a national movement of faith communities throughout the country, in states throughout the country, that focus on climate change. So in Virginia, we're concerned about climate as well as uranium mining.
Mm-hmm.
We're a unique part of the country in that we have uranium deposits in two parts of Virginia. And currently the governor has put forward a proposal through the Uranium Working Group that we reconsider lifting the ban on uranium mining. We and other advocates have considered this now for some time and come to the conclusion that the science doesn't offer us a safe way to do that. So as a consequence, we're opposed to the mining of uranium and would argue for maintaining the current moratorium on uranium mining in Virginia. That's a really big issue. It may well come to the General Assembly in some form or another in this next session.
Up in the 2013 session.
That's correct, in January.
So that was Interfaith Power and Light, you said? That's part of the effort under that group?
Right. Interfaith Power and Light works in our office. They are mm-hmm. our program. They work on uranium mining, but they also work on clean air in Virginia. We've done a lot to make sure that we argue for good clean air standards. The EPA issued three new standards this year. The third is being affirmed now to moderate the amount of carbon emissions, the amount of soot that gets emitted into the air, and the amount of mercury that gets emitted into the air. It's interesting, as I moved to Richmond just about 8 months ago, I don't think I'd paid attention to some of these concerns as much as I do now. Richmond, I learned, has the highest rate of asthma of any other major city in the United States. That's a very serious concern when we think about our air quality. And so it's one of the priorities that we'll be looking at this year.
Okay. So along with the issues of the environment and healthcare, what else are you looking at?
Well, sometimes we look at poverty straight up, right? How many poor people are there in Virginia? Virginia does better than most states, right? So we're fairly—
Better than most states in
well,
what sense?
Well, we're a fairly wealthy state. So if I looked at Virginia and I looked at Maryland and compared them side by side as far as, you know, what the wealth of that state is, I'd say that we're more or less the same. But Virginia has pockets of poverty. So
there's no doubt about that. The city of Richmond
has. It's certainly the case in Richmond. Richmond has much, much greater poverty level than most cities in Virginia. Certainly not the highest, but very, very high, in excess of 25%. It's been hovering there for a while. There are some serious infrastructure concerns that make it very difficult for Richmond to grow out of that challenge. One of them is transportation. It's very, very difficult for people to move, really, from where their home is to where their job might be. So if we thought about where new jobs are being created and where people reside, there's a challenge for people to get there in some cases, and transportation is a major issue, I think, for Richmond to grow out of some of the dilemmas that it's in with regard to poverty. So looking at systemic problems that lead to greater poverty or allow poverty to persist, those are the kinds of policies that we're concerned with. Also supporting programs that would help alleviate poverty. In the next session, I think we're going to be very interested to look at a piece of legislation that would support the use of temporary assistance for needy families. It's called TANF. It's a federal program that Virginia would draw down for Virginians who qualify. Now, there are provisions in that program that would allow us to draw down more resources, especially for certain populations. What we've learned is that in West Virginia, the state there has requested the use of TANF dollars to provide a supplement to children who are going back to school. So low-income families, very low-income families who are struggling, if they have children who are returning to school in West Virginia, can draw down up to $200 per child per year to pay for new school clothes, and school supplies.
Oh, back to school supplies.
Exactly. Well, new clothing as well as back to school supplies. Mm-hmm. So that's an extra supplement using federal dollars. It's already allowed in the law. It's already paid for, and it really benefits children in West Virginia. We think that it makes sense for Virginia to make a similar request and that we ought to pursue some kind of an answer that puts a little bit more resources incentivizing going back to school and keeping kids going to school.
So why doesn't Virginia access that? Would it cost Virginia something to access it?
It would probably cost Virginia something to administer it, but it'd be very modest. We don't know the answer as to
already
why
it administering TANF in other ways.
Absolutely. Okay. I think we are. And I think we could really do a lot with this. I think it would mean a lot for Virginia kids, and we hope that, the legislature will consider that.
So that's what you'll be talking – one of the issues you'll be talking about in the General Assembly.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. And what else is on your plate coming up in January?
Sure. Well, there's a lot of things really coming up. Who knows what will happen with the General Assembly. They have certainly a very full plate in a fairly short period of time. They're meeting for 45 days beginning January the 9th. There are other things that may come up, some good and some challenging. Last year, Virginia took up a foreign laws bill that was really rather divisive, arguing that we should not observe or hold accountable certain guidance that was coming from other legal systems. I think
like other states or
other countries.
Other countries, okay.
I think the point of the legislation that was proposed last year was to address Sharia law. It is not clear that anyone wanted to say that. And so as a consequence, they used the terminology foreign laws. Now, that had some unintended consequences when they pursued that. And it became clear that the foreign laws language that they proposed was going to affect a lot of other people who also base their work, in some cases, on foreign laws. For instance, in certain Jewish traditions, when a family is struggling and a husband and wife decide to separate, they might seek something called a get, which is a legal agreement in Jewish law that would allow them to separate and eventually divorce. They would take that get. It would not be uncommon for them to take that to a civil court, and the judge in many cases would argue the agreement that they reached in a religious context. So now you might consider this to be a foreign law in somewhat of a analogous case to Sharia law. Should we then say that that's not an appropriate guidance for family law for Jewish folks? I think that would be a step too far. So I think either this coming session, if in fact there is another foreign laws attempt, we would be very concerned that it be very clear that we understand what we're saying. And frankly, to my sense, or to my understanding, I looked pretty closely at this and trying to figure out who anywhere in Virginia has proposed Sharia law. And so far, I haven't seen anything at all about that. There is not a fair.
We will.
Well, and there's not certainly not in any kind of civil context.
Right.
Sharia law has a meaning for Muslims, and it's an important meaning that governs mostly family law, and that is not something that I think the state needs to be concerned about. But that is something that will probably come up again, and we'll be watching for that as well.
Isn't that interesting? That kind of points to some questions I had related to how faith plays a role in your organization and how you get people involved in Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy. Could you talk a little bit about the members and how they come from communities of faith?
Sure. And I think that's a really good question because I think it would be wrong to think of Virginia Interfaith Center being here in Richmond because, in fact, it's all over Virginia. I've probably driven more this year in my new role as CEO than I have in most of my years as an organizer.
Virginia's a big state.
It is, and it doesn't, it's always, oftentimes my trips are just a little bit further away than I would normally drive, but not far enough to take a plane. So, I've seen the wonderful countryside and enjoy going to all parts of Virginia. We have chapters, for instance, in the New River Valley, mostly in Blacksburg, but Christiansburg, Floyd, and other areas there. They gather and the folks that meet there have taken to meeting probably about 10 times a year. They put together programs for themselves where they want to be educated on one or another of the issues that we work on. Or in some cases, they'll bring an issue that's important to them and ask us for support in being able to share amongst themselves more information or to become more educated on those policy concerns.
Mm-hmm.
They took on last year a real concern around physical education in schools and pushed in the legislature to make sure that we had a better physical education requirement. That did not go as far as we'd hoped, but it really made progress because of their leadership. It is not always the case that people feel very much empowered to reach out to a representative and expect that that's going to result in legislation that will make it to the governor. But this legislation went a long way, and all because probably, you know, 30 very committed people decided to make it a priority and reached out to their neighbors and met with legislators and did so, you know, over a couple of years. So my sense is that eventually we will get good legislation on physical education, and they'll have been a part of that. That's, and that's just one story that that's an example of the kinds of things that people are doing. We have four chapters now. We hope to create two more in the near future. But I think whether you're in Blacksburg or Tidewater or Northern Virginia, I think the uniqueness of the people of faith is that, one, they're acting out of a fair amount of altruism and personal conviction for what they think is right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a strong motivation to feel, you know, that they can go to someone and ask for what they need and ask for their representatives to take a stand.
Yeah, that's inspiring to think about how a small group of people really can make a difference. And it does take time when you're thinking about long entrenched policy that needs to change. It can definitely take a while. So, well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Inspire Indeed on WRIR 97.3 FM. We're speaking with Marco Grimaldo of Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy. You can learn more about them at their website. And what's your website, Marco?
VirginiaInterfaithCenter.org.
And so people can learn how to get involved as a member there?
Absolutely. Please consider coming to us and learning about the various issues we work on or about membership.
Great. So what does it mean to be a member? What do your members do?
Well, our members do a couple of things. One, they support us with their time and resources. Two, they help us make decisions about the policies that we will work on. And then three, many of our members choose to volunteer with our chapters and get involved locally to organize around the policy concerns that are most important to them.
Do you have members join as congregations or?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So the organization originally, as I said, grew out of the Virginia Council of Churches.
Mm-hmm.
That was about 30 years ago under the leadership then of Reverend Jim Payne followed then by Fletcher Lowe. That was an important time, and much of the support coming to the Virginia Interfaith Center was then coming from judicatory bodies. These are the religious bodies, the Episcopal Diocese of Virginia, or, say, the Presbytery of the James.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two examples of religious bodies that continue to support the center today. So in an individual basis, we received individual donations and support from members across Virginia. In a judicatory sense, we get support from the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, who contracts with us to represent them at the General Assembly.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So they provide us a small grant that allows us to spend time focusing on many of the issues that the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America is concerned with. They are also concerned, interestingly enough, with poverty and social justice. In many cases, those line up well for us, and we're very happy to have that relationship. We also have similar relationships with other bodies as well.
Well, that makes sense. So, again, where people can learn more, what's that website one more time?
VirginiaInterfaithCenter.org.
Is Virginia spelled out?
It's all spelled out.
Okay, that's VirginiaInterfaithCenter.org. Great. Well, Marco, you mentioned that you're relatively recent to Richmond. I'm curious what brought you to this role to be the lead staff for the Virginia Interfaith Center.
Well, you know, that's an interesting story because I've spent most of my career working in public policy, either in some cases as a policy analyst or in other cases as an organizer. The largest part of my career was spent with Bread for the World, where I either served as a staff person or in some cases as a consultant. Bread for the World is a national organization working on hunger and poverty. And for the last several years working at Bread for the World, I was responsible for an area that included Virginia among seven other states. Mm-hmm. So I would often travel to Virginia, spend a fair amount of time meeting with people and people in the context of their churches to do organizing around hunger and poverty. That built some relationships. If you are an organizer and you don't understand the value of relationships, then you're not a good organizer. Mm-hmm. That's really what introduced me to the Virginia Interfaith Center and to the wonderful people that I now work with in Virginia.
Great. And so you came into this role, you said, 8 months ago?
About 8 months ago, yeah, in February.
In February. Where were you before? Where were you based before?
So my base was in Washington, D.C., and okay. I served a pretty large region through the Mid-Atlantic.
So it sounds like you've been working on these similar issues for a long time.
I have, yeah.
So what, you know, when we think about issues of poverty, it's not like things have necessarily gotten any better over the past couple of decades. Virginia Interfaith Center has been at it for 30 years now, is that right? Yeah. So how do you stay motivated? What inspires you to keep going when I can imagine there might be some times when you're like, oh, okay, this issue one more time. We still haven't solved it. What are we going to do about it now?
Well, so there's a cynic in me that says, you know, you can't always do good things. Sometimes you have to spend your time keeping bad things from happening. You know, and I think that there is some of that in American politics, that with respect to addressing poverty, we've worked really hard in recent years to make sure that things don't get worse, and that in the context of a really challenging economy, that people who are really struggling, low-income and even middle-income families that are trying very hard to stay afloat, that they don't get harmed more by the unintended consequences of some of the decisions that we make, decisions over the fiscal cliff and what Virginia legislators will do about that, I think are that kind of challenge that we have. The other side of me looks back and says, gosh, there have been times in our history as a nation that we've made incredible progress against poverty, right? So there's a reason we look back on the Johnson administration and say, gosh, the war on poverty was one of his hallmarks, because we really made progress. We almost cut poverty in half coming out of out of that era, mm-hmm. because we really focused on making a difference there. We as a people decided this was something we would not tolerate and we would make a difference. We made real progress and we can do that again. So I think if we focus together and we think clearly about how we bring everyone along, we can really do this.
So when you mentioned the Johnson administration and the war on poverty, some of what happened there are the entitlement programs that people are talking about. Everybody's talking about we need revenue reform, we need entitlement reform, mm-hmm. but nobody really talks about what they mean by entitlement reform. What does that mean for Virginia Interfaith Center and what you're going to be focused on in the coming months?
Well, in fact, I think we're focused on that right now, at least. The Virginia delegation and Congress as a whole will be making some choices here in the next weeks around what we have been sort of loosely calling the fiscal cliff decisions. What Congress decides about what we do with revenue. Do we, in fact, allow the Bush-era tax cuts to expire? Or if we do nothing with revenue and allow them to continue, then, in fact, are we going to make cuts? So it's either cuts or increasing revenue in one form or another. And there are a number of sort of decision points along that continuum. A friend of mine sent me an email this morning saying, I don't understand all of the little pieces related mm-hmm. to the fiscal cliff. There are way too many data points. I can't master that. I said, I don't think I need to either. I've got the broad strokes. I think what I need to say is poor people and many middle-income families are struggling already. We can't make choices that are going to hurt them more, that are going to make it more challenging for them to put food on the table and send their kids to school with the promise of a decent future. We need to be thinking very carefully about how we give struggling families the opportunity to grow out of this recession as the rest of the country moves forward. And therefore, we can't put Medicaid at risk. We can't put Social Security at risk because it provides for our seniors, and that's a growing population of our country. And we can't put Medicare at risk. And we ought to think about the programs that feed people. The Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program and the school meals programs cannot be at risk as a consequence of the budget choices that we're going to make. Those are some of our bottom lines that we'll be arguing with some of the delegation in Congress.
So you said that the General Assembly kicks off January 9th, right? And it's a 45-day session this year. Sounds like you definitely have a lot on your plate with Virginia Interfaith Center. Do you spend a lot of time there at the Capitol then yourself?
We do. Mm-hmm. So I came in a little bit into the last session in 2012. I mm-hmm. arrived as it had already begun. And so I got a taste of what session would be like. I expect this session will be all that much more busy. I enjoyed the opportunity in many cases because we do have colleagues that work closely on the policy issues. We are invited into conversations with coalitions or with legislators who want to learn more about, you know, the implications of decisions that they might be making. And we want to be there and be present for them to call on us.
Great. Great. Well, again, I'm speaking with Marco Grimaldo of the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy. If you'd like to learn more about them, you can check out their website at virginiainterfaithcenter.org, all spelled out, virginiainterfaithcenter.org. And next week, I'm actually going to be speaking to somebody who you probably interact with from the Commonwealth Institute for Fiscal Analysis that are also working with analyzing some of the policy decisions that could be made or are being made and the impacts on struggling families.
Well, that's right. I think the Commonwealth Institute has been our close partner, well, since they began, and we really do value their leadership on fiscal analysis in Virginia. We are at almost every important coalition table with them and value their leadership. So I think you'll get a lot out of that.
Great. Yeah. Well, that'll be a great follow-up for some of our listeners. Thanks, Marco, again, for being with us today.
Thank you, Elaine. This was great.
Well, thanks also to Jay Westerman for serving as Inspire Indeed's sound engineer, and Jesse Johnson, who's volunteering to operate the station's soundboard today. It's this mysterious contraption with lots of knobs and buttons. So we really appreciate our volunteers that take charge over there. And WRIR is a volunteer-powered station that relies on listeners, supporters, and underwriters to keep a local voice on their airwaves and feature nonprofits like Virginia Interfaith Center. And if you haven't heard, today is Giving Tuesday, so you can get your holiday season started off right by giving to WRIR.org. You can call 804-622-9747. We have a volunteer standing by the phone waiting for you. And you can also go to WRIR.org, and you can make a donation there. My name's Elaine Summerfield. You've been listening to Inspire Indeed. I hope you learned something here that inspires you to think about how you might make a difference with your deeds.